दिस पाथ ऑफ नॉलेज, ज्ञान योग, इट्स रियली वेरी सिंपल, बट बिकॉज इट इज सो सिंपल वी कान सी इट. रमना महर्षि सेड द ट्रूथ इज सिंपल एंड दैट इज द ट्रूथ. इट इज एवरी वंस एक्सपीरियंस. इफ यू आस्क योर सेल्फ द क्वेश्चन इन योर ओन माइंड, हु एम आई, योर आंसर विल बी वेरी ऑब्वियस. आई एम विपुल, आई एम राहुल एंड वट एवर इट मे बी. So if there are 10 people in a room and they ask themselves, who am I? What do they have in common? The names are different. I am is what is common. I am Gautam. I am Vipul. I am Venkatesh. I am Sheetal. So what everyone has in common is I am. The names differ. But you will agree with me that without the I am, you don't exist, because the I am comes first. Do you say Vipul I am, Gautam I am? So the truth is right before us. There's this quality called I am, which everyone has, but the names differ. And what does I am mean? I am, I exist, that is all. You are not going to say I was Vipul. If someone asks you, who are you, will you say, I was Vipul? Or will you say, I will be Vipul? You will say, I am Vipul. So this is what we have in common with everyone, without which we would not be alive. But the divine hypnosis, the dream of life, the living dream of life is that we forgot the I am and got hooked onto the names as separate individuals in my life. The foundation of the name was set aside. And now, in my life, I have individuals with various names who have done things to me, either for me or against me. But if I just thought about it, if everyone's base and foundation is I am, who is doing what? So I got lost in this dream of individuals doing things in my life. And I live my life like this. Time passes, I become older and older, and I'm always blaming and condemning people in my life, especially those who have troubled me. And my life passes by like this, thinking negative thoughts about certain people. And those who love me and are my well-wishers, I'm very happy. And so I live this split life, compartmentalizing and segregating the people in my life without realizing that everyone is the same I am functioning in my life. This is the start of the spiritual journey. And I want to now find out, what is this about? What is going on in life? Why am I here? I am here to realize that the same consciousness functions through everyone. I have been fooling myself till now. Anyone who says something against me, I perceive as a threat. And when someone is a threat, my gun is out to get back at the person, to react. Is this what life is about? This I am, this pure being, which is right here, right now, without which we would be dead bodies, is functioning, making some people say things and other people hear them. Right now, this I am is speaking through me and listening through you. This presence, I am, I exist, right here, right now, is talking through one instrument, listening through the other instrument. Now we forget this in daily living. And we have made daily living this for me or against me. This person is for me or this person is against me. That is how I live my life, in ignorance, because I'm caught between these polaric opposites. Not my fault. It is the design of life. It is the Maya. But I will find no peace in such an existence, because life will always be a battle. I'll be fighting battles every day. The family member who troubles me the most, the friend who I always fight with, love-hate relationship, The partner may be up and down the merry-go-round, one day good, one day bad. And I will largely live my life with a disturbed mind, not only troubling myself, but troubling those around me. So the start of the spiritual journey is seeing through this illusion of separation to understand that people who are troubling me are perhaps making me learn lessons I need to learn. For example, when I see that the person troubling me is operating on their script, their conditioning, their background, how they were treated when they were young, which is making them say things and do things, I no longer start taking it personally like I used to. I may perhaps say that if I was in that person's shoes, I may say the same things. For example, if I experienced no love as a child from the parents were fighting all the time. The child didn't know what love is, and the child grew up as an adult and knew only how to fight because the child's conditioning was one of seeing the parents fight. The love dried up. Can I blame such an adult for being the way they are? I see people who are in front of me. I can't see their childhood, their background, the entire story. But on the basis of what I see, I judge. But who am I to judge if I too have my own flaws, maybe a different set of flaws, which I didn't create? I didn't create my flaws. Circumstances, situations shaped me, shaped everyone. And when I start living this understanding, which is the entire pivot of the Bhagavad Gita, when I start living it, not as a theory, in day-to-day living, any person who comes in front of me, that what we have in common is the I am, the impersonal awareness of existence, I am. When I first see the person is in front of me as an equal representation of I am, as I am. Some I will resonate with, some I may not. Personalities are allowed to be different. But there will no longer be condemnation and judgment and hatred and ill will towards anyone. Then my life starts recalibrating, what Joel Goldsmith refers to as reinterpretation. I start reinterpreting the same person. Earlier, I was seeing this person through my physical eyes of duality. Now, my eye of singularity is operating, the third eye. The eye of I am is this eye. Earlier I would react, now I respond. This is what starts happening. The same person, the same situations, the patterns which are playing out, but I now start seeing them differently. It is a common fact that the troublemakers, people whose personality is to make trouble, are the most troubled. Ask any therapist that. So what happens? Earlier finger pointing, now maybe compassion, that this person must be suffering so much inside to say the things they say and do the things they do. Because now I'm no longer protecting and defending myself. That need is gone. Now I can see people for who they are, how God has made them, how God has shaped them. Now the spiritual quest has been the discovery of this I am, the self, consciousness. But it has generally been a misguided one, which is what the great masters are pointing to all the time, that the truth is right in front of you. It is not, the truth is not an experience. It is not about doing sadhana for 16 hours a day to discover this. It is not about getting anywhere in your spiritual practice. It is about realizing this truth. I cannot function in life as the I am. I have to function as a personality created by the divine. That is how I will operate. I cannot go saying I am like a zombie. But now I know that the personality is only one aspect and not the whole and soul. I look beyond personality. When I see people of a certain nature, earlier I was focusing on that nature and labeling them. Now I see it is just the same source consciousness functioning in a different way through different people. So what is happening now? When my focus is no longer on names and different people being responsible for who they are as autonomous entities, I'm being pushed back to the I am. When my mind, my thinking mind, is no longer consumed by the people in my life, he did this to me, she did that to me, this happened in the past, this person took my money away, that person said that and hurt me. When that dialogue is being erased, I am resting in pure being, which is I am. I am is pure being, pure existing, being present here and now. I would call that realizing the self. And that happens on its own. By and by, you keep seeing situations in your life, step by step, incident by incident, and you see the game for what it is. You don't get ruffled and perturbed like you used to get. Your mind is not running around in circles like it used to, because you are no longer obsessed with what people do. Now you know people do precisely what they do based on their conditioning and nature over which they had very little control. Now your focus shifts to, in this situation I find myself in with this person, what should I do? It is no longer about the obsession with the person. It is about the situation. Even a sage has to take a decision. He has to operate in daily living. So he takes the decision which he feels is the right decision, knowing the result may be something else. Even he cannot control it. But what he does know, no matter what happens, there is no one to condemn if the outcome is what I had not anticipated. Not to condemn the other, not to condemn myself. A decision was made based on my intellect, but as the Gita says, the outcome has never been in my control. That is how I live my life now. So this acknowledging I am, consciousness, existence, totality, unicity, it goes by various names, which is nothing but this presence right here, right now. You are present, I am present. So I find I am more and more present than absent. I am absent when my mind is elsewhere. So I meet a person and I'm thinking about what's going on at home or some work situation. I'm not present for that person who's in front of me because my mind is really all over the place. But this pure being, which everyone is, the light of pure being shining through everyone in my life is in front of me. It could be my building lift man. It could be my parent. Or it could be the beggar on the road I pass by. The light of pure being is shining through all of them. Am I able to see this? Someone who's in an office environment, let's say in a position of a manager, has people below him and seniors above him. The typical manager is going to try his best to prove himself to his seniors and get the maximum work out from the juniors. And in that process, starts compromising. Speaks to the juniors in a way he would not dare to speak to the seniors. And then various things happen. The enlightened manager knows that the same divine spark is behind and within the junior and the senior. He knows that everyone is performing based on their capabilities, and he has to decide as a manager who is a good performer, who is not. But he is not judging the individual anymore. He is judging the performance. We get hooked onto the individual, blaming them for performing a certain way and not performing a certain way. Situation is the same. The dialogue shifts. If he has a senior over him who's troubling him, he has to deal with the situation. But if he is aware, he will know. Hopefully, I'm not troubling my juniors like my seniors troubling me, because now he's at the receiving end. So when one sees this divine spark in everyone, that is what I call a transformation, because I've kept my likes and dislikes aside for now. This is the journey to God, because God is constantly telling us, I am coming in front of you with various names and shapes and forms. Are you willing to see me who is within everyone, or are you seeing individuals? It is tough. I agree, it is tough. You take that one person in your life who has troubled you a lot, And just within yourself, look at this person. If you don't have the courage to apologize to this person, do it within yourself. That my view was limited on the basis of which I judged you. Now I can see that the hand of God is above everyone, equally. Yes, if you are troubling me further, I must now decide. I don't want to be at the receiving end all the time, so I will have to take a decision. But now I am more concerned with my peace of mind, not with getting back at the other person, not with hitting back. You did this to me, so I will do this to you. If God is the primal doer, whom are you getting back at? Be very careful when you want to get back at people, because it means you are getting back at God. When I stop obsessing with individuals, I am resting in the I am. The I am is not an experience. That is the biggest joke on the spiritual path. In search of the experience of the I am. Who gets the experience? The me. And this whole teaching says the annihilation of the individual sense of doership is the I am. Experiences come and go. Does your sense of presence come and go? Till your last breath, it's there. So is your sense of presence an experience? Whereas it is the foundation of all experience. Because in order to have an experience, I must be there first to experience it. I received a very nice manuscript by a Russian man who's quite famous in Russia. Unfortunately, all his videos on YouTube are in Russian. I want to read out two or three lines which really appeal to me. I would not know if he's a spiritual master, but he's certainly an evolved being, a healer, a scientist, a philosopher, and who has done a lot of work in seeing the cause of illness. And as he so rightly says, we think that technology and science, modern medication, is progressing very well, which it is. But the idea is to remove the cause which creates the illness. And humanity is progressing at a very fast rate to create more and more illnesses. Only a perfect human being can be an ideal healer, which is unattainable in our daily life. That's why it is so important today to take another path, the path of knowledge, which allows for proper use and development of bioenergetic healing's potential, such that nobody would be hurt by improper contact with the energy field resources. The path of knowledge. This is the path of knowledge, what we are speaking about. We are exploring, we are understanding, we are realizing that our physical eyes are very limited. These are the eyes of duality. There's something bigger than what we see, but we can't see that. We are designed to see objects in a room. We are not designed to see the space between the objects. So this yoga, Gyan Yoga, is about this discovery. Now, this is very important. Once I asked my patient, what do you think is the worst crime that man can commit in his life? The worst crime. The patient replied, the murder of another person. Quite obvious. The worst crime you can commit is murdering someone. No. Actually, there is a greater crime that exists. This is the crime of killing of love, because before you kill somebody, first you have to kill the love inside you towards that person. We would be mass murderers by that definition. Killing the feeling of love is the basis for many crimes and misfortunes. Now, what does this mean? Does it mean we have to love everyone? We can't. We are not designed to love everyone. But what he is referring to is not that love which is the opposite of hate. When I see that the same I am, the same consciousness functions through everyone, would you not call that love? That would be a transcendental love, not the polaric opposite of hate. But as Osho rightly said, the problem with that love is perceived as a cold love. And he would say the Buddha's love was a cold love, because the human loves the warmth of the dualistic love. She loves me, he loves me, wow. Changes tomorrow. Because it's dualistic. The Buddha's love is a cold love. It is an impersonal love. The nature of the Buddha is love. Now, it makes absolute sense that an enlightened being, why would he or she want to murder someone? Why? It cannot arise. Because the felt oneness with being is there, the I am. Unless I'm designed to be a psychopath, genetically I have an issue, and certain acts are committed, that's a different story. But this killing of love, what he is pointing at, is when we lose this realization and we hold individuals accountable and responsible in our lives. In Advaita, very few masters talk about love. My spiritual teacher didn't, because he knew that 99% of the time it was misunderstood. His guru, Nisargadatta Maharaj, said, all I ask people is don't hate anyone. That was the negative way. Not easy. Try it. All I ask is don't hate anyone. Because that's a trick. Because if you reach that state where there's no one to hate in your life, you will automatically have no one to love in your life. The polaric opposite will not manifest, because your nature becomes love. Your nature becomes loving. You may find that the person who screamed and shouted at you, you may say, hey, let's go and have a cup of coffee. Are you open to it? These things start happening. That is the love he is talking about. Now, is that love an experience? It is just the joy of being and recognizing that in another person. And we withdraw love from those who have troubled us. The ego is a protective mechanism. It is afraid it will die. It is afraid from the moment it is created of death. I don't want to die. And anyone who threatens my existence, that person is my enemy. It could be something as basic as a point of view which differs from yours. You say something and someone says something else. You say, wow, I went to this new restaurant, it was fantastic. And the person on the table says, really, I thought it was crap. Now, we'll know how open you are to the other's point of view. The other person is equally entitled to their point of view, but we start withdrawing a love. This guy has a different point of view. And someone who agrees with me, full love there. Because when someone agrees with me, I survive. When someone threatens me, I could die. These are the games we play. And the people who are threatening your views, your opinions, are a blessing in your life. They are there to show you this, that your point of view is a point of view, not the truth. You think it is the truth. Your views on a matter, on a relationship, your views are based on your filters. The other's views are based on their filters, which is the truth. Can your view be the truth? Can that view be the truth? It is a view. Yours is just a point of view. What is the truth? The truth is the impersonal functioning of consciousness, recognized as the source, God, totality, whatever you call it, through which an outcome will happen and the divine will prevail. We really need to accept this in our daily lives, because we assume we are speaking the truth. We are speaking our point of view, the way we have been made. And so we honor the person in front of us and acknowledge that I may not agree with their point of view, but they are equally entitled to their point of view. So simple. So as my teacher would say, we agree to disagree without being disagreeable. We agree to disagree. It doesn't mean I have to change my point of view. But I agree, someone may have a different point of view. So I'm no longer trying to convince you till kingdom come to my side. There's no need. I'm no longer fighting you all the time because your point of view is different. There's no need. Because I'm not defending myself. Because I'm not afraid to die. And when I am not as an individual, I am. When I am not as an individual, I am. That is why when The famous story when the Buddha is walking on the road with his disciple and someone stands in front and starts abusing the Buddha. And the Buddha is just standing there in silence. And his disciple is getting agitated. How dare this person speak to my master like that? How dare he? And after hurling abuse after abuse, this man goes away. So the disciple asks the Buddha, how could you bear it? How could you take this abuse? And the Buddha says, look, if someone gives you a gift and you don't take the gift from that person, the gift will stay with the giver. Similarly, if someone abuses you and you don't take the abuse stays with the abuser. Now, what does don't take the abuse mean? Don't take delivery of it. This person is abusing me. How dare he? The ego takes delivery and then all the guns are out. Buddha had no delivery of the abuse. You know, in the esoteric circles, this is a very important point. Because what happens if the abuse is not taken delivery of? What is actually happening? The abuser's abuse is directed towards God, towards consciousness. Then what happens? It comes back. This is an occult statement by the Buddha. It comes back to that person. So that is why they say a person resting in God, no harm can come to that person. That is the law of the universe. What you give is what you get. Because then that person who has abused the source. I thought I wouldn't speak today, but it's happened. Lazarev is his name, Sergei Lazarev. He says, in the early years, religion used to give a person the correct stereotypes of behavior. A person knew one simple thing. All is God's will. That was a wonderful block from negative subconscious influence on people and the surrounding world. Man could interfere with the course of events or resist them accordingly to personal interests. But inside, he was obliged to maintain harmony with the surrounding world because his soul is an energy field, and particularly on the subtle energy field level, it unites into a single whole with the entire human universe. This all is God's will. The problem is, it is too simple. And here he is saying, this was an inbuilt mechanism centuries ago. What religion used to say, thy will be done. The message is old and ancient. Today's teachings are not new. They are just remembering the old teachings. And here he says, it was always already there. Just to acknowledge the will of God in all circumstances, operating through everyone, was the natural block for karmic distortion, as he says. But this individual became so obsessed with my will. This is me and my will. And the thy will be done was shunted out. Someone who has for 40, 45 years in Russia researched human beings, bioenergy fields, what he calls karmic distortions and influences. What have I read here is the most simple things, not rocket science. And that is the whole tragedy. Simple things are not alluring. You tell people that peace of mind is the be all and end all, and they say, oh, kindergarten stuff, too simple. Try living it then. I have seen this across decades. The person who says it's kindergarten stuff is the one with the most troubled relationships. A constant and uninterrupted striving for spiritual perfection is the most effective mechanism of blocking and clearing karma. And this teaching, like all wisdom teachings, there's nothing really special about this teaching. When it is imbibed and lived, nobody is the doer of their actions, thy will be done. Simple things. What this man says is, it clears the karmic blockages. The highest teachings are designed to do that. The Gita is designed to do that, to clear the blockages, to live a peaceful life, peaceful coexistence in harmony, not in disharmony. Now, of course, nobody's relationships across the board will be perfect. We are in the realm of duality. But by and by, largely, we find it is harmonious. And those which are not, you bow down with gratitude. If you need to part ways, you part ways, but you wish them well. And you tell that person, you will face challenges in life like I will face. May God be with you in those moments. So although the relationship was not meant to work out, you don't wish harm and ill will upon the other. He or she is a fellow traveler on the journey of life. But you all have different roads to take, different paths to walk. Thy will be done. And that is when Joel Goldsmith said in one of his books, I think, I'm not sure whether it was conscious union with God, or I'm not sure, but he says that day will come when you see people in front of you, and rather than name and form, you see carved on their forehead the words, two words, I am. That day will come. That before you see the form and the name, you see I am, I am, I am, I am. And when you see that the person in front of you is a representative of I am, that to me is bhakti. What is bhakti? My love for God. Does it mean I have to do puja of the murti of Krishna in my temple every morning? Is that my love? Or seeing God in everyone, is that not bhakti? Then what has happened? Is gyan different from bhakti? If I see God in everyone and everything, that is the ultimate bhakti. So then is bhakti different from gyan? Or isn't it the same? In the course I did in Tibetan mysticism, it said you don't realize how united you are with the person in front of you, because the air you breathe out is the air that person breathes in. Do you realize that? The pran shakti is what is uniting us. We are already giving and taking with each other. That is how united we are. What is that? Life force. That life force which gives us the luxury of loving and hating people. Absolutely crazy. You know, when you start living life like this, you feel your old way of looking at people and life was absolutely crazy. Stupidity. That is when you know the veil is being lifted. The veil of Maya. The lifting of the veil. Can you imagine? It is your last day on earth. You know it. And you find, I really have no resentments, ill will in my consciousness, malice, harm. I'm free of all this baggage and burden. And I'm going peacefully, knowing I faced what I faced. People did what they did. I did what I could. Learned the lessons I was meant to learn. Didn't learn some lessons. But I am exiting without the drama of for and against, carrying grudges into my consciousness till the last breath. Oh, the same old me. Why did this happen to me? Why did that happen to me? Why did this person treat me that way? Why did this? Why did that? And that is my last day, and I'm thinking about all these people in my life having done things to me, and that's how I exit. Which would you prefer? Which exit would you prefer? And so, when the wisdom teachings say it is better to die before you die, it is referring to the death of the ego in daily living. You don't have to wait till the end. The secret of life is to die before you die and find that there is no death. That's a quotation I read many years ago. What does it mean? Are we afraid of deep sleep? Is anyone afraid of deep sleep? We are not. In deep sleep, you don't exist. And you're not afraid of not existing. But in the waking state, you're afraid of not existing. It's a joke. It's absurd. If I am not afraid of deep sleep, which is my absence, death is also my absence. Why am I afraid of death? But in a waking state, yes, I'm afraid. So who is this ego? It is afraid to die. But when the baby was born, there was no ego. There was the I am, pure being. Why do we run to a cradle? Why do we do kuchiku? Because it's pure light, pure being, pure I am. After some time, The parents keep calling this baby a name. This is your name, this is your name, this is your name. Identification starts after about a year. And the baby realizes I'm separate. And then a bombardment of conditioning is placed into the baby by the parents. Now the baby realizes, this is who I am. This is my name. These are my parents. This is where I live. This is the income group. This is my religion. Who said? Pure being was born. And this ego got built up and created. Is pure being afraid to die? Can pure being be afraid to die? Can I am be afraid to die? But the I am so and so is afraid to die. And in this whole journey is full of words, 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 concepts, concepts, concepts. Too much. Stories I've built, created. I could write novels on each person in my life and how they treated me and what they did to me. Who cares? Then that is the joke. The peace of deep sleep, which is your absence, is what people try to get the experience of their absence through drugs and psychedelics and this and that. Deep sleep is enough, yeah. You don't need all that. In the waking state, you want to try all these things. I want Shaktipat, I want this, I want an explosion here, there. Who is this who wants all this? Or would you not trade all that for a life of peace, equanimity and calm, knowing that based on my destiny, pleasures will come my way, pains will come. What comes unasked, I have to face. And better to face it in peace, equanimity and calm, rather than a turbulent mind. That is all I want. That between today and my last moment, life will be full of surprises for everyone. Ups and downs. The wheel of fortune is turning. The wheel of time is turning. But if I can find my peace in daily living, which is why the Buddha said Nirvana is Shanti. He did not say Nirvana is bliss. Nirvana is Shanti. Shant raho. Be quiet. Be calm. That is Nirvana. That is all. Is Shanti an experience? Shanti is the self with a capital S. The self is Shant. The human being is the turmoil. When the self is realized, there's nothing left. What does this being calm mean? Supposing the sage is looking for a job, trying his best, not getting the job. Certainly he'll be concerned, but he will be calm, knowing that God's will prevails. The sage will not have sleepless nights and will not blame himself. I'm not good enough, I'm this and that, that. That dialogue does not go on in the mind of the sage. Because the mind of the sage is vacant, he knows I have a situation, I will try my best. Whether I get it or not is not in my control. Shanti. That is the only difference between the sage and an ordinary being. The sage will also face challenges. In fact, bigger challenges. But Shanti. Each situation the sage faces will be seen in the light of clarity. The third eye of Shiva. The eye of singularity. The eye of the self. Objectively. Because the sage is abiding in pure being. When a reaction happens in the sage, he knows. This is the way I am designed. It is not that he will not react at all. He has also gone through the human experience. But he will not be obsessed with it being my reaction. He knows this reaction was meant to arise and there will be consequences. So he is freed of the burden of the reaction. That is the only difference. Being freed of the burden is Shanti. And that is why when someone asked the great sage Ramana Maharshi, how do I know a sage is a sage? His answer was, by the peace that you feel in his presence and the sense of respect that you feel for him. He didn't say anything else. He didn't say, if a sage has attained 15 levels of samadhi, he's a sage. He didn't say that if the sage can be in three places at the same time, he is a sage. He didn't say if you see a golden aura around this man, he is a sage. He said, by the degree of peace you feel in his presence and the sense of respect. Why this? Why did he say and the sense of respect you feel for him? Because the self is operating through the sage. Reverence is, in fact, perhaps the right word to use, a feeling of reverence to this self which is operating through the sage. These are the qualities Ramana Maharshi has said. He has not said when you go and sit and your kundalini starts rising and you start shaking, then you know that person is a sage. Even in a realized kundalini master, you will feel the degree of peace in their presence. It all comes down to only that. And in your own lives, when you find by and by you are more peaceful, more calm, more centered, people will start telling you that. You may not even realize it for yourself. Others will say, hey, what's happened? You don't react like you used to. Something has changed. And they might be uncomfortable with that change. Because, you know, the ego is looking for pushback all the time. I know if I poke you, you're going to react. And if you don't react, that means I'm losing control over you. So they say, what's wrong with you? Yeah, something's wrong. But you're resting in peace. So they get even more agitated. Then you will know I'm really resting in peace. Because there's no pushback. I recently gave a talk on the theory of karma and Advaita. It should be up on YouTube pretty soon. I've tried to bridge the two. What is so interesting about this karmic theory, which was an eye-opener for me in this man's research, was how he could trace the cause of a child's illness to the behavior of the parents and nothing to do with the child. He had the ability to, for example, any disease a child has, or like even bedwetting. Modern science treatment is what's wrong with the child, why is the child doing this, analyzing the child. And he actually saw an event that transpired between the parents when this baby was in the womb, an event of abuse between the parents. And he has the ability to see the karmic distortion in the energy field of the parents, which through transference gets into the child's karma. When you think of that, I mean, I think the Gita is simply fascinating. The one line, the ego deluded thinks I am the doer. That takes away everything. That is the key, the golden key. The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. I am the doer. Whereas the doer is the I am, but the ego thinks the ego is the doer. Karma can end there because karma is doership. Karma means action, but it has become my action. Our scriptures are encoded with healing, provided they are lived. Otherwise, all my life I will have the Gita by my bedside or in the Bible or whatever and read one page before sleeping, but still in the day be a nasty person. That is why Goldsmith would say your presence should be a benediction wherever you go, which means when you're at peace. Otherwise, one troubled mind is going to meet another troubled mind. At 4 p.m., you're having one troubled mind is having tea with another troubled mind. At home, one troubled mind is having dinner with another troubled mind. These are my problems. Which are your problems? Tell me. We are basically bags of problems. Problem is meeting problem. And loves discussing problems. Because when I hear your problems, my focus on my problems is diminished. So I feel very nice to hear other people suffering. That is what happens. Are you a bag of problems when you present yourself? Or are you carrying with you the peace of God? Mostly, it is not our problems which get us down. The real problem is the ego. Not the problems which the ego has. The ego is the problem. A friend of mine who's 82 once told me this. He said, my grandchildren are really troubled. They are suffering their childhood. And he said, my son says, oh, Papa, don't worry. I'll sort it out. I'll sort out their problems. Very affluent. So he'll have like three maids for different aspects of the children's growing up and this and that, whatever. He's telling his 82-year-old father, don't worry, I'll sort of them. Don't worry, I'll deal with their problems. And my friend, my 82-year-old friend, he said, I just erupted and told my son, how can you sort their problems out when you yourself are the problem? You are the cause of the problems. So it is not our problems. I'm not trying to make light of our problems. I'm just trying to say that most of our problems are not problems. When we look at them in this light of clarity, they are created. The turmoil has been created to project images, to sustain my self-image, and I've created multifarious problems for myself. That is what I've got lost in this maze of problems, and then life bogs me down. Then I get depressed. On a closing note, I remember some years ago, there used to be a wonderful spiritual master in Pune by the name of Dada Vaswani. And my friend Sheetal had taken me to meet him. And we were having a chat with him, and he said something very beautiful. He said, I tell everyone, whether you are walking on the road, whether you're in the bus, whether you're in a car, whether you're in the office, you send everyone a blessing, a silent blessing. So he would tell his audience, simple people like you and me, just send everyone a blessing. But there was a great secret in that. Because what happens when you send everyone a blessing, the content of your consciousness is blessings. The content of your consciousness is blessings. You think you're blessing the other person because in this objective world of form, we are projecting, I bless you. But now the mantra in the consciousness is blessing, in the mind is blessing, 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 blessing. So your consciousness is being transformed to a benevolent, blessing, and healing consciousness. And if all there is one consciousness, you are blessing yourself. Do you know why people get healed in the presence of enlightened beings? They are not doing healings, which sometimes happens. The reason is that the consciousness is one. You are just tapping into that and getting healed. Nobody is doing anything. It is not a separate consciousness. The I am is the I am. Because if the sage's consciousness is divinity and pure light, one is just presenting oneself to that. So someone asked Goldsmith, but the opposite can also happen. My impure consciousness and corrupt the sage's consciousness. Because consciousness is one. It doesn't work like that. Because one is the truth and the other is the illusion. And in the fire of truth and light and clarity, the illusion is burnt up. That is the difference. Chalo. Thanks to Meenakshi and Vikrant for giving us their beautiful home for the satsang. And thank you all for coming, because if you all didn't, I would have no one to share this message with and I would be sad. But not unhappy. Let life and living be lighter. What does lighter mean? Let more light shine. Lighter. Your burdens, no matter what they are, not as heavy as the me has made them out to be. The divine presence, the divine I am, is always ever there, just waiting to be acknowledged. That itself lightens the burden. Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done, lightens the burden of the me. That is why Joel Goldsmith said, once he had figured everything out, done all his homework, study, research, he said, yet there were some people I could not force myself to love. I just could not love them. Some it was impossible. Everything else I had figured out. 99.99% done. He said, then it struck me just out of the blue. He said, I told God, look, I can't love them. That is clear. So let's make a deal. You love them through me. I can't do it. The ultimate offering to God. It's your job now. That is surrender. That is surrender. I can't do it. I tried. What he called laying the sword down, the battle to live. That is surrender. Thank you.